First, I want to thank the other three organizers for letting me invite myself to. So I'm going to talk about topological terms of nonlinear signal models, and the goal is to understand the infrared physics, infrared physics or infrared fixed point induced by topological terms in signal models. So I want to acknowledge my collaborator, Andres Ludwig, and Ngug, who are in the audience. So by topological term, I mean theta term and Weston-Norwegian term. So for those of you who are not extremely familiar with this, I will give a brief introduction to Weston-Norwegian term and theta term, and I will talk about the simple example, like 0 plus 1 dimensional example and a 1 plus 1 dimensional example, which are well understood. So the goal is to understand the effects of the topological term in 2 plus 1 dimensional nonlinear signal model and 2 plus 1 dimensional principal chiral model defined on a simple Li group manifold. I'm going to focus on theta equals pi. That's a special case. And then if there's time, I'm going to talk about some physical realization of the nonlinear signal model with topological term. And also I'm going to try to mention some relation between these topological terms to some other phenomena like the deconfined criticality, which was studied a while back. Okay, so let me start with the simplest example ever, which is the 0 plus 1 dimensional O3 nonlinear signal model. It's like simplest nonlinear signal model ever. So this just there's no spatial dependence, just the time dependence of the order parameter n. And basically, this model describes a very simple physics. It just describes one point particle moving on a two-dimensional sphere. Very simple. So it's a single particle physics. So which means that it can be solved exactly with no trouble. So we can convert the Lagrangian into Hamiltonian. The Hamiltonian just be g times L squared, and L is the angular momentum, which generates rotation of the two-dimensional sphere. So the spectrum of the Hamiltonian is just L times L plus 1. L is the eigenvalue of the angular momentum. And the ground state is L equals 0. The ground state corresponds to L equals 0. And there's no degeneracy at all. And the whole spectrum is gapped. Okay, so it's a trivial ground state with no degeneracy. And the spectrum is fully gapped. So very simple. But now I can try to modify this model by adding another term to it. And to modify the model, I can add another purely imaginary term to a nonlinear signal model. And this imaginary term is defined like this. So let's consider a periodic evolution, which means let's consider the time equals 0 and time is infinity. The vector is the same, which means that it's a periodic evolution on a sphere. So this means that this vector n is a mapping from a closed loop to the sphere. It's a mapping from a closed loop to the sphere. And then the Weston-Norwegian term as a purely imaginary term, so W is a proportional to the solid angle on the sphere, which is enclosed by the closed loop. Okay, this is the definition for the term. And this term is called Weston-Norwegian term. Okay. So we can see that there are two different ways to define the solid angle enclosed by the loop. One way is to count the upper hemisphere area. The other way is to count the lower hemisphere area. Two different ways to define the solid angle. So if I count the upper hemisphere, the solid angle will be calculated like this. So theta is this angle and phi is that angle. Okay, so we can calculate it this way. And when I count the lower hemisphere area, this solid angle will look like this. Different equation. So the difference between these two different kinds of definition of Weston-Norwegian terms, if you just subtract and just do a W minus W prime, you can immediately see the difference is precisely K. Difference is K. It's K. So our physics should be independent of the definition of Weston-Norwegian terms. So basically, we are free to choose whether we want to count the upper hemisphere solid angle or the lower hemisphere solid angle. This means that these two definitions should contribute to the same phase angle to the particle function. This implies that K has to be an integer. When K is an integer, the definition, two definitions will be equivalent to the particle function. So this means that the coefficient of the Weston-Norwegian term has to be quantized to be integer due to some topological reason. Okay.
The restrictions to periodic trajectories, I should think of as because you want to study the planet temperature?
No. It's just when we consider some correlation, some bulk correlation, we are free to choose the boundary condition. So let me just choose the periodic boundary condition on temperature. Yeah. Okay. So this is another better way to write the Weston-Norwegian term. So we can extend the mapping from a closed loop to the sphere choose a mapping from a disk to the sphere. And the closed loop is the boundary of the disk. So the parameterize the disk, introduce two coordinates. One is tau, it's a loop coordinate. The other is u, which is the radial direction coordinate. So when I extend the mapping from the loop to the disk, then the Wilson Wheaton term will be written like this. So the integral will be written in terms of two coordinates, one is tau, one u, and u is the radial direction of disk, and tau is the boundary direction of the disk. Okay, so this is a nicer way of writing down the Wilson-Wheaton term. So now, how do you solve the spectrum for this model with the Wilson-Wheaton term? Again, this is very simple. So this model becomes a point particle moving on a sphere with a flux through the sphere. So this term behaves like a flux seen by the point particle. Okay. So how much flux is that? So turns out that if I put k here for level k Wilson-Wheaton model, the flux is 2k times pi, 2 pi times k flux. So now the problem becomes solving a single particle problem with a background flux. And we all know that is a lambda level problem. It's a lambda level problem. So in a flat space, a lambda level degeneracy is precisely k. So when I have like k flux, the lambda level degeneracy is precisely k. However, on a sphere, the degeneracy is k plus 1. On a sphere, degeneracy is k plus 1. Because the space curvature will also contribute to the degeneracy. So I mean, you can solve exactly, and you can just check by yourself. So lambda level degeneracy k plus 1, this means that turns out that this model actually precisely not a single model we would use to describe a single spin with s equal to k over 2. So if I put k equals to 1 there, it corresponds to spin 1 half, and then we know spin 1 half and 2 fold degeneracy. And on this model, it corresponds to 2 pi flux through the sphere, and 2 pi flux through the sphere will give you 2 fold degeneracy in the ground state. So which means that suppose I really want to use a nonlinear sig model to describe a single spin, this would be the model I'm going to write down. It has to be a model with a Wilson-Wheaton term, otherwise it doesn't work.
So a single spin, but you still have the angular momentum, the orbital momentum.
Just a localized single spin. Right.
I think of a localized single spin as having two states, period. So what are all the others? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is a particle on the sphere.
So it's now a spin 1/2 particle on the sphere.
Oh, no. The spin is a point particle on the sphere, and it corresponds to a single spin. Since the spin is also a vector. So now I just, I mean, so.
Okay, so it's also a vector.
Yeah, right. So let's try to just use a semi-classical way to describe a single spin. And we know spin naively is a vector. So naively I can write down nonlinear sigma model for single spin. And then this term has to appear in the nonlinear sigma model to make sure the degeneracy is. Sorry? Yeah. So the G has to go to infinity. You have to go to infinity. Sorry.
All right. So you want to send G to infinity to remove all the excited.
Yeah, remove all the excited.
Yeah.
So what happens if I take k equals 0?
Sorry?
If I take k equals 0.
K equals 0, there's no degeneracy. It doesn't correspond to any physical thing anymore. It's just from k equals 0, there's no degeneracy. There's a single trivial ground state. Right. So it doesn't correspond to any physical quantum field. It corresponds to some trivial classical. So now let's break the O3 symmetry down to O2 symmetry, which means that I break the three-dimensional notation to a two-dimensional notation. This means that I restrict my point particle to move on the equator of the sphere. Let's do that. So then that Wilson-Wheaton term is reduced to a term look like this. So just integral of partial tau phi with a coefficient of theta over 2 pi. Turns out if you check the number carefully, you will realize that when k equals 1 corresponds to theta to pi. If you check the number carefully, k equals 1 is very quiet. So this model is very simple. This model basically is like a single rotor, and the phi is periodic. Because the phi is periodic, its canonical momentum is a discrete integer. In the canonical momentum is a discrete integer. So I can convert it to Lagrangian to a Hamiltonian form, and Hamiltonian will look like this. The g times the n, which is the canonical momentum of phi, minus the theta over 2 pi squared. So this Hamiltonian tells us that when theta equals to odd number times pi, like when theta equals pi, the ground state is twofold degenerate. And therefore, for any odd number k, it's always twofold degenerate. Like still the pi, n can be either 0 or 1, and they're degenerate. So, okay. So the degeneracy is lower compared with the O3 case, but still, the degeneracy is there. We have some enhanced degeneracy due to the existence of the theta term. So based on this very simple 0 plus 1 dimensional example, we already see some sign of the effects of the topological term. Basically, the topological term tends to increase the degeneracy of the system. From this very, very simple 0 dimensional, the topological term tends to increase the degeneracy of the system. And we are going to see this effect again and again in higher dimension as well. But this example we can solve exactly. So it's going to increase the degeneracy. Okay, now let's move on to the 1 plus 1 dimension. So now let me consider just a one-dimensional anti-ferromagnetic spin chain with spin S, just a one-dimensional Heisenberg spin chain. Okay, and I try to describe the Heisenberg spin chain using field theory. And when we try to describe the lattice model using field theory, we should try. So we should first figure out what is the low energy degree of freedom of the system is. So for the Heisenberg model, it's the most natural to expect low energy freedom is a nail order parameter. We just expect that. So nail order parameter defines this as minus 1 j times sj. This is nail order parameter. Okay, because every side is a single spin, so the whole system should have a sum of the Weissmann-Witten term coming from every side. We should just add all the Weissmann-Witten coming from every side. And when we just add all the Weissmann-Witten from every side and take the continual limit, this sum will give me this. This actually turns out to be a pretty nice term. It's a partial x, partial tau theta, and this tau. So this actually turns out to be a theta term in the 1 plus 1 dimension. It's a theta term in 1 plus 1 dimension. So it comes from adding this Weissmann-Witten term. So this was done by Hodan a long time ago. So it says that 1 plus 1 dimension O3 in nonlinear sigma model with theta equal to 2 pi times s is described by this kind of model. With theta equal to 2 pi times s. So the nonlinear sigma model with a theta term describes spin chain. Okay. And actually, we know a lot about spin chain. For instance, there's a very famous Lipschitz-Mattier theorem, which says that for spin 1 half chain, it's either gapless or two-fold degenerate. This is a theorem proved by many people. So they call it Lipschitz-Mattier theorem. So this theorem which says that if I look at this field theory, when theta is high, the field theory has to be either gapless or two-fold degenerate. This is what we learned from spin chain. So what does theta term do? So basically, n vector is a mapping from space-time to a target space, which is a two-dimensional sphere. Mapping from space-time to target space. So suppose we are only interested in the bulk physics, I can just compactify space-time to be a two-dimensional sphere as well. So now the mapping from S2 to S2 is classified by the homotopy group pi 2 S2 equals V. So basically it means there's an instanton or Sturmian type of instanton in space-time. So the theta term basically give a phase angle E2 I theta to every instanton in space. So we can see that your theta term 2 pi, it doesn't give us any bulk effect. Because 2 pi is no effect coming from the instanton. But when theta is high, the situation is different. So based on the Lipschitz-Mattier theorem, we know that when theta is high, it's either gapless conformal field theory, which corresponds to the nearest neighbor anti-ferromagnetic spin 1 half chain, or it's gap and two-fold degenerate. So this two-fold degeneracy corresponds to two different kinds of valence bond solids of a spin chain, of the J1, J2 model. So suppose I consider a spin 1 half J1, J2 model. J1 is the nearest neighbor Heisenberg coupling, J2 is the next neighbor coupling. When J2 is large enough, then the system will just form two-fold degenerate and gap valence bond solid pattern. And one pattern looks like this, almost instantly. The other pattern looks like that. Just a two-fold pattern of
it. Okay. So is there a simple related between this two-fold degeneracy and the 0 plus 1 dimensional two-fold degeneracy? Can I say this like a total spin is one pattern?
That's going to be different. Okay, that's going to be difficult, actually.
Yeah, that's not true. It's not like the total
swing is one. Right. Total swing depends, whether it's all even, depends on the size of the lattice. So, right. But this is also true when you have an even normal size of the lattice. So, total swing depends.
If I look at this twofold quantity derivative, in that space, this theta term. Behaves like this
interface
of
C1 half. So this is one way to write this two-fold theorem precisely as just like n equals 0 and n equals 1. as two states of a single half. There's a way to write that. But I'm not going to show it in the slide, but we can, I mean, yeah, so I can show you later. So it's a precise one way to write this, it's a two-by consortium as just a two states of single half. Yeah, it's one to do that. Yeah, turns out that for the nearest neighbor string I have chain, which means it's a control field theory, it's well known that a nail order parameter and a one spun solid order parameter, both they have the same scaling dimension. They all have scaling dimension 1/2. They have the same scaling dimension. So which means that I can define an O4 vector here, O4 vector 5. The first three components is a nail order parameter, and the fourth component is a one spun solid order parameter. And it turns out that this control field theory, which comes from the SO3 invariant theory, is described by the O4 invariant non-sigmoid in one dimension plus a Western Norwegian term. So this Western Norwegian term has three coordinates, t, x, and u. So this is the field theory describing this control field theory. And suppose I take this Western Norwegian model, O4 Western Norwegian model, and calculate Rg. Calculate Rg, I'm going to see this. So the g will flow strong from zero, but it's going to flow to a fixed point and finite g. We can have to calculate this directly. So we kind of written this a long time ago.
So this
N and Q have the same scaling dimension. So there's the emergent O4. I mean, the emergent O4 is very natural because in one small dimension, any conformal field theory should have two copies of symmetry, left and right. So my lattice theory has SO3, which means that in the lonely continuous theory, the SO has double. You have a left SO3, right SO3, you put them together, you become SO4. So which means that there has to be a SO4 invariant way of describing the conformal field. It turns out to be this. And this precisely just the SC2 level 1 conformal field.
So that theory has a gap space and gap space.
Yes.
In the gap space, there is the emergent symmetry.
Yes.
The model has another model where the emergent symmetry becomes the rigorous.
It's not explicit, right.
And then I thought then that means follow the same argument, then this has an even higher.
No. So this is the final. So the emergent expression, so compared with the lattice model. So lattice symmetry can emerge, but you're already in the field theory. So.
Marginal.
I mean, you can try to break SO4 down to SO3 by training on some term. That term is a marginal, depending on the sign. On one side is marginal irrelevant, the other side is marginal irrelevant. So
if it is relevant, then it flows to this gap.
Yeah, okay, so this is the goal of my talk. So my goal of my talk is to try to understand the effect of a theta term on two plus long dimensional principal chiral model defined on compact simple V groups. Like SUN, SON, SPN, so all these simple V groups have a pi 3 equals V. So we can always write down some theta term like this. For the simple example, we just take u equals SU2. If we take u is SU2, then everything is very simple. So for every SU2 group element, I can write it as an O4 vector, a phi 0 times identity matrix, plus I times phi times sigma. So for every SU2 matrix, I can write an O4 vector. So this model, principal chiral model, precisely becomes the O4 nonlinear C model plus a theta term. So this is the model I'm going to start. So I'm going to start with this model. So simply
so. So the positive curvature of the target space is crucial for this.
Yeah, I think so. But otherwise, it's not compact.
In cases where it's reaching flat, it doesn't change the dimension.
Well, suppose we have that kind of lead group, then can we still have this kind of term now?
Any term generally flows the other way if you have.
Okay.
No, I wasn't thinking about groups, I was just thinking about other targets.
Yeah, so there are cases when you replace these compact spaces by some non-compact spaces, or spaces that are both compact and non-compact in a super elite group, and you can get something with a RG flow in G reverse assign at recoupling, or is actually Ricci flat.
I don't ask you about what.
So some simple probability of the model. So we notice that this term is purely imaginary. So on the time inversal, theta will go to minus theta. And also as I mentioned before, for the bulk physics, theta and theta plus 2 pi should be identical. So which means that suppose the system has time inversal symmetry or some other discrete symmetry, then theta has to be at some discrete value. Theta equals k times pi, and k can be any integer. So there's no topological reason why theta has to be certain value, but based on symmetry, theta has to be some integer times pi. And actually, when theta equals this number, then on the renormalization group, theta definitely cannot flow because it's fixed at this value by symmetry. So I'm going to focus on this value of theta because it doesn't flow at all on the RG. So when theta is 2 pi, or theta is 2k times pi, the RG flow for G is very simple because theta does not flow at all. So I'm just looking at RG flow for G. The RG flow for G is very simple in this case because now this model just becomes an O4 non-sigma model with no topological term. So we know the phase diagram very well. We have an ordered phase and disordered phase, and ordered phase and O4 symmetry breaking spontaneously. And then this transition is an O4 Wilson Fischer fixed point transition. So these are all very well understood physics. Okay, so now when theta goes high, then the instanton will matter because the even number instanton, all number instanton will give you different phase factor to the partitioning function. So now I will first give a conclusion, and then I'm going to explain the conclusion. So the conclusion is that in this case, there are two generic possibilities. The first possibility is that there's still an ordered disordered phase transition, but the disordered phase is a gapless conformal field theory. It's a gapless theory. Means that in a disordered phase, the correlation between phi and phi will be power law. And the second possibility is that, again, there's still an ordered disordered phase transition, and then G will flow to infinity, which means that a gap will be open when G goes to infinity. However, the system will be twofold generate. So which means that a disordered phase of the model is either gapless or twofold generate. So we can see that, so this means that this topological term does not change anything in the ordered phase, but it changes a lot in the disordered phase. So this actually modifies the disordered phase a lot. And also, just like a zero dimension and a one dimensional example we have seen, the topological term tends to increase the degeneracy of the system. Okay. Okay. So to understand this, let me still come back to 1 plus 1 dimensional O3 dimensional sigma model. So in 1 plus 1 dimensional O3 dimensional sigma model, I try to understand this property of the O3 dimensional sigma model based on our knowledge of spin chain. But actually, this kind of understanding cannot be generalized to 2 plus 1 dimensional because we don't have spin chain for the O4 model anyway. So I will try to first understand this model without using spin chain, and try to argue the same results as the Lipschitz-Nadia theorem without using spin chain. And then I'm going to generalize this argument to 2 plus 1 dimension on a sigma model. So this is what I'm going to. So this argument. So our goal is to look at the theta to pi. But let's look at the theta with 0 and theta with 2 pi first. Let's look at these two limits first. And when theta goes 0, everything is single. So this model is 1 plus 1 dimensional model. So just open up a gap in the bulk, and there's no edge physics at all. However, when theta with 2 pi, the situation is different. When theta 2 pi, the bulk is still gapped. But when bulk is gapped, I can just integrate at the bulk and look at the boundary. And because the bulk is gapped, when I integrate the bulk, it will not generate any singular term at the boundary. So the boundary will still be described just by a single and a very local and a standard nonlinear sigma model. However, the boundary nonlinear sigma model will have a topological term now. The topological term turns out to be a Weissmuller-Witten term at k equals 1, a single spin with a return at k equals 1.
Should
I just put open bound. Sorry, I didn't mention. So here I just, if I want to consider boundary, I just put the system in the open boundary. So the way to see the Western Wheaton term is just that. So I mentioned before, the way to define Western Wheaton term, I have to introduce two coordinates, one is tau, and another u. And here, this theta term precisely has two coordinates, one is tau, one is x. So I get to view, x as u in the Western Wheaton model, which means that this term becomes the Western Wheaton model on this side and on that side. And you take this one. So this actually means that this system has edge state, And edge state is precisely 3.5. So it's a dangling 3.5 edge state as to, as a two-annual system. So now, let me do one thing. Let me just tune theta. Let me imagine we can tune theta continuously. I tune theta from 2 pi to 0. Okay. If I tune theta from 2 pi to 0, then somewhere in the middle, the edge state has to disappear. It has to disappear. And actually, it turns out that the edge state cannot disappear without going through a bulk transition. This is the key of the argument. The edge state cannot disappear at all without a bulk transition. The reason is because, suppose I tune theta from 2 pi, I basically break the time inversal and some other discrete symmetry. So we can ask ourselves, if I have a single 3.5, and I break some time inversal or some other discrete symmetry, but I still preserve the SO3 spin rotation symmetry, can I destroy the degeneracy of the spin or not? Turns out we cannot. There's no term we can turn on with the breaks of time inversal or still preserve SO3 symmetry and actually gap out system, gap out spin and half. There's no term like that we can add to a single spin and half Hamiltonian. So this means that spin and half, so even though I break time inversal or some other discrete symmetry, the spin and half edge state cannot disappear without a bulk transition. So now we have to go through a bulk transition to destroy the edge state. So now there are two parts.
Sorry, in terms of the spin chain, the theta equals 2 pi is the old
angle. Yeah,
and theta equals 0 is what? Some broken.
It's a spin chain with the Hund's coupling, which is negative, which means that it's a spin chain but favors spin singly on every side. It favors spin. Yeah. It's a Hund's coupling that has the wrong sign. So yeah. Okay, so now there are two possibilities for the edge state to disappear through a bulk transition. The possibility one is that I go through a continuous or second order bulk transition, which means a bulk gap close somewhere in the middle. And suppose there's only one transition, and actually the bulk gap has to close here at the scale of pi. Because by symmetry, this side of the phase diagram and that side of the phase diagram should have the same bulk spectrum. Bulk spectrum should be the same on this side and that side. So which means suppose there's one transition, one has to happen here at the scale of pi. Okay. So this means that when scale of pi, the system has to be gapless. So now let me assume that I always want to look at the large G phase. Let's tune G very large, which means that system wants to enter the disorder phase. So this argument says that disorder phase actually prefers to be gapless. So this possibility one. And the second possibility is that I don't go through a second order transition. Okay, sorry, there's one more thing I want to say. Okay, so when a second order transition case, what happens is that when I tune theta from this side to pi, this edge state will become more and more delocalized, will become fatter and fatter, and eventually they're going to interfere and they cancel each other because the bulk is gappy, so they can actually cancel each other. So this is what happens. Okay. So the second possibility is that I don't go through a second order transition, I go through a first order transition. When I go through a first order transition, the bulk gap is always open, it's always bulk gap. However, the first order transition means that the state at theta equals 0 and the state at theta 2 pi, they have a level crossing when I tune theta. And then when they have a level crossing, somewhere in the middle they have to degenerate. And they will be degenerate at theta pi. Because of still the spectrum is symmetry. So which means that in this case, when theta of pi is gapped, but has twofold degeneracy. And here the edge state just disappears suddenly. All of a sudden edge state just disappear because it's the first order transition. Okay, so now this means that by using this argument, we obtain the same results, the same conclusion, consistent with the Lipschitz-Madian. So Lipschitz-Madian tell me that this model with theta pi is either gaps a twofold degenerate, and here we can see that using this argument we can get the same result.
Can you be better at ruling out the possibility that there is
that I cannot. But suppose there are two transitions, that actually means that at some theta there will be some Galois point. That would be even weirder and even more non-trivial.
The Lipschitz rule setup.
Lipschitz magic, well, I mean, Lipschitz magic, they don't have a model.
There isn't a transition, there isn't something
I'm saying I'm certainly there are sort of possibility where it goes through some multiple transition, but then I'm gonna predict that for some other theta it's gonna be gap phase. But I think it's better to be purified than gap phase. That's easier. That's a probability, right? Yeah. Okay, so now this is our RG flow diagram for the energy. So the probability one is that when here the pi and 3 pi is going to flow to a fixed point, and when here is the other loop here from the pi is going to flow to, you know, flow to infinity. And of course, for the second probability is that the pi is no flow to infinity, but people here. And it turns out that for spin chain, it's a third one, which is true. I mean, for some, based on some other arguments, for some other analysis, the third one is true for this model. It's actually it's a marginal case, which means that this G will flow marginally to this point and then marginally flow away. So we can understand this by doing the Abelian Boltzmannization of spin chain, and we can see that.
So
Abelian
Boltzmann is I guess when G is large, really you're not using this field theory, because I don't really know how it's
it has a regularized field on the lattice.
So you really, you know, when G is large, you really want to think about that blue fixed point in the problem.
Well, here G is not very large, though, so.
What do you mean?
I mean, so what do you mean by G is large?
Well,
compared to
what?
Okay.
I mean, it means that something has happened with the lattice.
Yeah, actually, so if you try to regularize the model of lattice, you will see that the regularization actually will change the RG flow. But so this flow diagram is for spin or half chain. If I retake spin or half chain into analysis, so that's a J1, J2 model. And I tune J2 over J1. And I see how the transition from gap point to the dimerized state happens. It's going to be marginal. You can do the RG flow that you'll see that. So actually, what I'm saying, for spin I have change, turns out this is the correct RG flow. Yeah, you can do the Abelian Boltzmannization.
And also, you have theta flowing in this diagram, right? And I think
so if you look at the RG calculation you have done for this model, it's actually an extremely non-perturbative RG equation. Yeah, it's going to be extremely non-perturbative RG. And it's controversial. It's, so whether those calculations is controlled or not, there's a controversy about that. But if you look at the equation, it's going to be extremely non-perturbative.
Well, even in terms of non-perturbativity, if you assume the field theory, right, where this hedgehog term is integer, then clearly, even
non-perturbative,
theta cannot
normalize. Well, that's sorry. So something that we should go back and read how they calculate. I mean, I can sketch how they calculate that. Basically, what they did, so it's an assumer a length scale of the system, and they assume that the Skirmian has this kind of size, the length scale they assume, and then the system will have a finite density of Skirmian, and then they evaluate the contribution of the Skirmian density to the free energy. And then the rescale system, and then they can calculate this RG flow. So basically, so this is a rough idea of how they do it. But this, you can argue whether it's the correct word. But I'm just saying that this is something you have done. I know controversial, but it's something I copied from.
But I should say, in terms of the field theory, the results are fully known from integrability. All these flows are integrable, so you know exactly what infrared fate is.
It looks like a very unstable flow, right?
If
you have a double zero
of
the data function, I mean.
So I said that actually this is a more generic case.
Yeah.
So this is a more generic case. So this one.
It's the irritability of the process?
Sorry?
Well, the direction, this is controlled by the conformal field theory, SU2 level 1.
Okay.
and it has just two relevant directions. So you know that by just knowing the conformal. And what the fate is as you perturb the conformal field three, so in the direction where it's relevant and goes in a massive phase, that's a gross Newbery model. And the flow at theta equals zero, theta equals two pi, is just the inner, is the signal.
Okay. So now this argument, let me give the same argument to the two plus one dimensional case. So in two plus one dimensional case, again, my goal is to look at theta pi, so look at the zero and two pi first. But now instead of, so now I change the geometry a little bit. So I want to look at the geometry with a cylinder, which means in x direction is open boundary condition, and in y direction is closed boundary condition. Yeah. So again, when theta zero, the bulk is gapped, and nothing happens. Nothing interesting happens. But when theta is 2pi in a large G phase, in disorder phase, the bulk is still gapped. But again, the edge, we have topological term. So again, I can integrate the bulk and look at the edge. And the edge will be a local nonlinear sigma model. In other words, we only have a local term because the bulk is gapped. And then this local nonlinear sigma model will have a topological term. And topological term still comes from that theta term. So that theta term, look at the boundary, will be the one-dimensional Wessel-Witten term for all four. All four Wessel-Witten terms at the boundary k equals 1. And then you all know that this model is a conformal field theory. So basically here it means that when theta 2 pi, the boundary here will be the S user level 1 conformal field theory. Okay, so now we can tune theta from 2 pi to 0. Again, we do the same trick, tune theta from 2 pi to 0. So again, the trick, the point, so one of the points of the argument is that the edge state cannot disappear without going through a bulk transition. Again, this actually can be argued this way, because suppose that we have, normally when we have a one-dimensional conformal field theory, let's imagine how can we gap it out. The way we gap it out is that we can use some backscattering between left moving mode and right moving mode, we have to do the backscattering. So the backscattering will actually always, so we want to make the backscattering relevant. The backscattering actually is gonna gap out. So it turns out that suppose I induce some relevant backscattering, it means I break the left symmetry cross right symmetry down to a diagonal symmetry, which means that I have to break the O4, which is SU to left plus SU to right, to the diagonal SU. So this means that suppose I want to gap out the edge without going through a bulk transition, I have to break the symmetry. I have to break the SO4 symmetry. It's the same as our in the one dimension. One of the systems main argument work, I have to make sure I have the SO3 symmetry. Here in a 2 plus 1 dimension, I have to make sure the system has SO4 symmetry to do that. Okay. And because my model has SO4 symmetry, so there's no way to do that. So this means that I have to go through a bulk transition to kill the edge state. But then, there are two possible ways to go through the bulk transition. The first one is go through a second order transition, and then the edge state will disappear continuously, and then the bulk gap will close, and the phase transition occur at theta pi. So the first possibility is that when theta pi, the RG flow will be order this order transition and this order phase, the gap is space. And the second possibility again is that the first order transition, so we have a level crossing between the state with theta 0 and theta 2 pi. And when this happens, they will be degenerate at a theta pi. So I have two different possible scenarios. One is a gap disorder phase, the other two-fold disorder state. And here, the two-fold degeneracy, the bulk degeneracy. So it has nothing to do with the boundary state, it has nothing to do with the edge state. It's just the bulk degeneracy. It's two-fold. Right, so again, let me draw this kind of RG flow diagram. The first possibility is that, so in all the cases, there's always an order disorder phase transition. There's always an order disorder phase transition between all four order phase and disorder phase. And here, when theta pi and 3 pi, this is a gap phase. And here is two fold degenerate. There are two different kind of possible. So those blue circle denotes the ordinary O4 Wilson-Fischer transition. And the red circle denotes some other transition which we are not sure about the universal class. Okay, right. So now the same conclusion, same argument also be generalized to the principal chiral model defined on other simple Lie groups. So U mesh can be any can be group elements of SUN, SON, SPN, but then the argument will be the same. Right. Okay. So now the question is, how do we generalize this model? For instance, let me consider how do we generalize the simplest 2 plus 1 dimensional O4 nonlinear sigma model with a theta term. So the simplest thing, the simplest way to generalize this model is to do what Abendroth-Wiegmann did a long time ago. We couple the O4 vector to a Dirac Fermion, to a 2 plus 1 dimensional Dirac Fermion, and O4 vector phi coupled to psi bar psi, which means that it's going to open up a gap. And there's a flavor gamma matrix here. So this gamma has nothing to do with space-time gamma, so it's some flavor gamma matrix. And then we have to make sure that the phi is the O4 vector. And if I start with this model and I integrate out the fermion, I'm going to generate an O4 nonlinear sigma model with n times phi. And n is the flavor number of the fermion. Okay, so this is what Ray did. However, a true kind of smaller physicist like me should not assume O4 symmetry at the beginning. We should try to make O4 symmetry emerge by itself. So how do you make O4 symmetry emerge? Turns out that like 5 or 6 years ago, Senko and Matthews has a nice way to make the O4, I mean to make the whole symmetry and model emerge. It's a model like this. Still, it's 2 plus 1 dimensional Dirac fermion. And the fermion, so in addition to the gamma matrix index, it has another SC2 flavor index. So you couple to Pauli matrix sigma vector, and I couple to O3 vector n. So here, I only assume my system has the SO3 symmetry. I only assume SU2 symmetry, which is natural in terms of my system. But in addition to all this, fermion also couple to U1 gauge field A, dynamical U1 gauge field A mu. Okay. So it turns out that this model, if I integrate out psi, I'm going to generate exactly O4 nonlinear sigma model with a theta term. It's a little surprising, but actually, if you count the degree of freedom, it's not. It won't be so surprising because actually, for the O4 inverted model, for O4 model, if I condense the O4 vector, I'm going to get 3 Goldstein modes. I'm going to have 3 gapped Goldstein modes. So here, we can try to match the number of Goldstein modes. For instance, here, suppose I condense the n vector. The n vector is an O3 vector. If I condense the O3 vector, it's going to give me 2 Goldstein modes. But then it's another mode coming from the gauge field. So the U1 gauge field will give you another photon mode. And a photon, in 2 plus 1 dimension, the photon mode is dual to a superfluid boson mode. It's a superfluid Goldstein mode. So which means that this 2 plus 1 equals 3. That's the count. Yeah, actually, I had a slide which means step by step. So. Yeah, so let me sketch that. So now, step one, we can integrate the fermion, and we generate a nonlinear sigma model for n, and we keep the same f mu nu square term for the gauge field, and then have a half term for n, and the half term is a mapping from a three-dimensional space-time to n. So this term actually is a topological term classified by pi 3 s2 equals z, is the half term. And then it's another term like this. So this term means that, so this is a Sturmian current. And a Sturmian current will couple to a mu. Basically, these are the four terms that we have. And step two is that we take the CP1 representation of the O3 vector. We take n equals z dot sigma v, ordinary CP1. And when we do CP1 mapping, we have to introduce another U1 gauge here, let's be known as little a. Another CP1 U1 gets little a. And then this model will become this. So we have a CP1 Lagrangian and f mu nu squared. And then this term becomes a mutual transcendence term. Because the capital A is the same, but the Sturmian current in terms of CP1 representation will be precisely the flux current, precisely the flux current of the little A. And then the half term is precisely the O4 theta term. The half is precisely the O4 theta term. And the O4 vector phi is defined like this. So the real part and imaginary part of V1, V2 will give me the O4 vector. This is the. So now we almost have everything. So now the last step is that we integrate out the capital A. We integrate the capital A. Then we generate a mass gap for little a. Because this term is into capital A, and we generate a little mass gap for little a. Because the little a is gap, I'm going to ignore little a. So I ignore this term, ignore little a, and end up with this model. So it precisely is precisely the the O4 non C model with the theta term, and the theta term pi in this case. So here the O4 symmetry will emerge. Actually, the O4 symmetry always emerges in kind of smart system. So because suppose we consider a non-collinear spinning wave. Okay, so normally the nail order is described by the vector. So it's basically the manifold is S2. But suppose I consider a non-collinear spinning wave, they have introduced two vectors to describe the system, and two vectors will be perpendicular to each other. They have two vectors perpendicular to each other. And when I have two vectors perpendicular to each other, the cross product will be a third vector. So which means that for the non-collinear spinning wave, the correct manifold will be SO3, which is a tetra, formed by the three perpendicular vector. So which means that for a non-collinear spinning wave, the symmetry will also be SO4. So basically, the whole SO4 emergence is that the SU2 group of our physical system, SU2 symmetry group of our physical system itself has SO4 symmetry. So the SU2 group itself has SU2 left and SU2 right, so the total is SO4. So that's why in some sense, the SO4 symmetry can emerge in many cases.
You made this argument that if you condense n, then you get these three gold stones, the third being the gauge field. What happens here to the Polyakov mechanism for getting out the gauge field if they are in two plus one dimensions?
Actually, gauge field will be non-compact. Gauge field can be compact, but based on this term, turns out if you do the partial derivative of little a, you're going to see that the flux. Will carry spin up. So the flux of the capital A will carry spin up based on the mutual transignment term. This means that because the flux of the capital A carries spin up, the monopole will be suppressed because the spin down carries SU2 and the spin is conserved. So the monopole is suppressed. So this is the, I mean, it's the same idea of decompensated carry. There, the flux is forced to carry some momentum.
So this half term. Can I understand that as so if I have a special strontium, that's going to end up fermion?
Okay.
I'm trying to understand the physical meaning of the
half. Oh, yes, yes.
So the special is so 2 plus 1 in 2D, I have a strontium of the N.
Right.
And that's.
Yeah,
that's
you can understand the fermion. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, precisely the fermion sign. Yeah, precisely the sign.
It's the fermion to be integrated out.
Yeah. So basically the strontium will carry psi. That's why, I mean, yeah, so Hopton will say that, but so if you integrate out psi, you get the strontium is fermion. It just means that the strontium carries psi over there. Okay. So now let me take a little bit closer look to the twofold degeneracy of my muscle. So there are twofold degeneracy everywhere in my argument. So let me take a closer look at the twofold degeneracy. So let me take the one swan the O3 model first. So I said that one possible fate of the model is that G flows infinity and system becomes twofold degenerate. And the twofold degenerate corresponds to the state with theta of 0 and theta of 2 pi. This is two states which are degenerate at the pi. So this means that I can view theta as a dynamical field. I can just naively view theta dynamic field, then these two states become two different condensates of theta. This is very naively, I can just view this way. So okay, how do I understand the theta field? So it turns out that theta term can be written like this. It will be theta, that capital theta there, partial tau phi. And the phi is defined this way. It's defined this way. It's a pretty weird term, it can be defined this way. So if I just plug this in here, it doesn't get reproduced as the theta term. So which means that theta and phi, they are a pair of conjugate variables. They are a pair of conjugate variables. So theta condensate means that system is in a coherent state of phi. Okay. So now the question is, what is phi? Okay. So what is phi? Because the twofold degenerates correspond to two different coherent states of phi. And now the question is, what is the capital phi? So it turns out that the capital phi can very easily see if I break the O3 symmetry, not the O2 symmetry. If I break O3 symmetry down O2 symmetry, I introduce nx equal to cosine d of phi, and y is sine d of phi. Then this integral, if I take the capital phi integral space, it equals to this. Which means that phi actually is a kink. So phi is a kink of nx and y, which means that if nx do that, it's going to give me a non-zero phi. So this actually means that the two different degenerate ground states actually correspond to two different coherent states of kink, of the kink. This is actually perfectly consistent with the spin chain. Suppose I take a spin right half chain and do Abelian Boltzmannization and I go and drive a system into a valence bound solid state. We are going to see that the two different valence bound solid states, they are precisely two different coherent states or two different coherent states of the kink. So basically, the two degenerate states are two different proliferating states of the kink. The kink is proliferating, so we have two.
Very well. How can I see that there are two from the kink picture? So from the fact that there's a kink, how can I see there are two different?
It's a real field. So basically, this is a real field. And the canonical momentum is also a real field. For real field, you only have two different ways to condense. It's icing type. Okay, so the same understanding can be generalized in 2 plus 1 here as well. So in 2 plus 1 dimension, we can still take that term and write it like the theta times the partial tau phi. So the two different ground states are two different coherent states of U phi. And the capital phi turns out to be the Sturmian number. If I break 04 to 03, then the capital phi becomes the Sturmian number. So which means that the two-fold degenerate ground state corresponds to two different coherent states of the Sturmians. Okay. This is some very rough understanding of two different degenerate states. What are they? Okay. So we can see that here, on this side, I have a 04 order state. And on this side, I have two fold degenerates, which I can view as a V2 order state. I can use a real field and then make it order at the plus or minus sign to get this two fold degenerate.
But compared to the interesting configuration of the density experiments, or do you really need some more?
It's a coherent state. It has to be coherent state.
But nothing is just this term in a number.
I know. So but the order term, because it's a canonical conjugate term of phi. So phi exists, but the order time is theta. So I mentioned that theta will have like two values. These are two ground states. And the theta is a canonical momentum of phi. Right? So that corresponds to two different coherent states. Okay. So I'm saying that so here, this side is O4 order, this side is V2 order. So actually, it turns out that we can try to unify the O4 and V2 by introducing a larger vector, larger O5 vector. So I can just introduce, it's O5, now in sigma in plus one dimension with the Weston-Wheaton term. And I turn along a term, which breaks the O5 down to O4 called V2. So it turns out that suppose I take this model and I break the symmetry from O5 to O4, then this Weston-Wheaton term will be reduced to an O4 theta term. When takes one term, will reduce to O4 theta term, it's the theta term type. Okay, so now let me investigate this model, this O5 model. So this is complete. This is not there. So for the O5 model, if I calculate the capital RG flow with the Weston-Wheaton term, then I expect to the RG flow like this. You have ordered phase and have disordered phase, but disordered phase is the conformal field theorem. This is something I expect to see. And then if I break the O5 down to O4, then I have another direction to flow. So this side will be O4 order phase, this side will be V2 order phase. So this is a conjecture in the RG flow for this model is O5. So this line is like the O4 and C model here at the pipe. So it turns out we are not the first one who actually conjecture something like this. Turns out that there was a conjecture made earlier about Picon-Fine criticality. So what people did back then is that they break the O5 vector, the O5 symmetry down to O3 across O2. We turn a term here, we have sort of V1, V square, and 1, 2, 3, and the minus V4 square, and V5 square. So this term breaks the O5 symmetry down to O3 across O2. Then there's a conjecture about the whole RG flow that you want like this. So here we have a fixed point here for the O5 in that case. And by breaking down to O3 to O2, the O3 order side is a nail order side, and the O2 order side is the valence bound solid order side. And this point corresponds to the direct signal transition between nail to VBS, and this is described as the deconfined. So this is called deconfined criticality, and this line is described as a non-compact CP1 model. Should I expand more? Okay, I don't expand more. Okay. So for a non-convex CP1 model,
from the point of view of the lattice model that produces this
distribution
one, is this
a tuning parameter? Yeah, so tuning parameter is a tuning
parameter.
Yeah. So for the CP1 model, actually, we have like a. So obviously, here the O3 vector defined as U divided by sigma G, is O3. Another O2 corresponds to an N is a monopole over it. So N will create a flux over U1 gauge 2. So M is the monopole over it. So because the complex, the real and imaginary part together will form another O2 vector. So this is O5 vector. So for CP1 model, actually we can define a five component for the parameter. Okay, so this is a conclusion. There's no conjecture on it, but this is a conclusion on this. That's the end of the talk, thanks.
The statement that theta doesn't modify this trivial transition, is that your conjecture as well?
That? Well, yeah.
So the red circle and the blue circle are the same. Are they?
They're not.
I see. How do you understand the difference? Or?
I don't have a controller calculator to show that, but. If you look at the example, this is a fine-tuned, if you tune here, you can use a fine-tuned fixed point. So the inverse side is different here. But
for more general group, as you went, you have also this emergent ladder.
That I don't know. I cannot really. Sorry. Yeah, I mean, somehow the 04 to 05 is very natural. For a larger group, I. Yeah, but long dimension, they always enhance from S0n to S0n cross S0n.
So but this 04 to 05, I also don't have a peak production one, even. It's not that bad, but there's no contrast or some other.
Yeah, otherwise, the conjecture.
In the spin chain case, but actually haven't got a third possibility, which was none of these words realized.
Sorry?
Is there some way to rule out something on some?
No, that's just a very, not just, I mean, if you really have that case, it means that the beta function. If you do the beta function, it cannot be something like that. Right. This looks very fine-tuned, actually.
Yeah.
But somehow, in front of the spin chain, okay, so it's true. But I really don't think.
Is there some maybe nice understanding of that? Does it require some art regularization and then you have to
do this? I can't think of any general reason in two dimension, which makes sure it happens.
So, I mean, you're interested in these two possibilities. How should I imagine, what is the choice that determines which of them is there?
Oh, yeah, I didn't. That's right. That's my belief, but I realize, if I explain, that's going to be too long. So.
Can you control the higher order terms to decide which one you get?
You have some argument. You can say that depending on the sign of a higher degree term, it either favors the power law correlation or favor complete disorder. The sign will probably will favor.
Is there
something
to estimate that sign for me and for this
sign? What?
Higher
degree
term
for. Oh, I mean, right now, the Kuhn's model, right? So I'm free to choose any sign.
Yeah, but in some actual.
I don't know. I mean, you can take it direct from it and try to calculate the high degree terms you want to assign.
questions. All right, let's think.